This week's parsha is called Parshas Yisrael, and the majority of the parsha deals with the most important event in Jewish history, right? Matan Torah, the Torah is given. But it's strange then that it should be called Parshas Yisrael after Moshe Rabbeinu's father-in-law, who came before Matan Torah, and according to some opinions, may have come after Matan Torah. And in any case, it comes as it precedes the story of Matan Torah, and it seems the whole parsha is named after it. It seems somehow it's very relevant. Rabbi Ruchim Lubavitz in Das Torah, the Mirror Mashgiach, explains that learning how to accept criticism and rethink decisions is crucial to accepting the Torah. We'll always make mistakes, and truly that's the only way to successfully learn Torah. The Gemara says that. You learn Torah through trial and error, through making mistakes and being corrected and being humiliated about it. That's what the Gemara says. That's the best kind of Torah to learn. It's the one you'll remember the longest. But it's only if we're ready to admit our mistakes and backtrack and rethink. Yisroi demonstrated something about the Torah that changed really world history from that point and forward, though it took a little while for the rest of the world to catch up. Moshe Rabbeinu was the supreme leader of the Jews. He was the Melech. Someone who defied Moshe Rabbeinu was considered a Meirid B'Malchus and could rightfully be put to death, as was the case with Yeshua as well. He was a king, and he had the status of a king, and he had just done some pretty awesome miracles. So he was, on all levels, feared, respected, and everybody was in awe of him. And kings at the time, and for many hundreds of years afterwards, weren't in the practice of being questioned. It wasn't the thing you did. You didn't question a king. If he wanted advice, he asked for it. Otherwise, he didn't offer it. But over here, Moshe Rabbeinu was challenged, and he was challenged by Yisrael. And he accepted the rebuke, he accepted the criticism, and rethought his approach and changed it. And that was a demonstration for all of the future of Klal Yisrael, because that's what would always be happening. The Nevi'im would constantly be rebuking the kings, the Talmidei Chachamim were constantly arguing with each other, Talmidim would argue with the Rebbeim. It was the nature and the truth of the Torah that demanded it, and that's why the Torah precedes this story, as Rabbi Ruchim explains, with the story of Yisrael, because that's crucial to learning Torah. Now, that being the case, let's see what we can learn from Yisrael about giving criticism in a way that it may actually have a chance of being listened to and working. So, first of all, Yisrael is referred to as Kayan Midyan. Now, Kayan Midyan means it was his occupation prior to his conversion. He was the priest of Midyan. It would seem strange that we would refer to him as Kayan Midyan. You think that he left that far behind, right? He came with very courageously left behind all of his desires to join, to be the sole person to join Klal Yisrael. But the Al-Sheikh says that it's precisely what the Torah is trying to demonstrate to us. Yisrael was a truth seeker. He tried every idol in search of the truth, and he was willing to drop his position, his prestige and wealth just to cling to the truth. And he was a Kayan Midyan originally, but now he was a simple convert. So he gave up being a Kayan Midyan because of the truth. And it was because Vayishma Yisrael. Yisrael was someone who listened. He listened, he paid attention, and he saw the truth, and he changed because of it. Now, that is definitely the first attribute of anyone who wants to criticize and to change and give constructive criticism and wants to be listened to. It has to be clear that the person's agenda is the truth, and that's all that they care about. They don't have ulterior motives, they don't have personal motivations. They are simply doing it for the sake of MS, for the sake of what's best and for what's right. And otherwise, it's very difficult for a person listening to accept it, because they'll constantly attribute it to, you have this reason why you're doing it, that reason why you're saying it, and they will doubt the veracity of it. The second thing about Yisrael is that Yisrael sees a problem. Klal Yisrael are standing from morning to night. They're waiting for their turn to speak to Moshe Rabbeinu. Each one had a din Torah, they had an issue, they had something they had to discuss. So there were these long lines, and everybody was waiting, and they were standing. And it was, he found this Yisrael to be humiliating for Klal Yisrael. And the Medrash explains he was demanding the covet of Klal Yisrael, and he felt that Moshe Rabbeinu, by making them stand and wait, was diminishing their covet. Now, what was Moshe Rabbeinu thinking? So Rashi actually explains, not here, but Rashi in Devarim says that Moshe Rabbeinu actually found this whole event to be a criticism of Klal Yisrael. When he accepted Yisrael's suggestion, and he employed other dayanim, and it became a whole network of dayanim that were answering questions until you made your way to the tap to Moshe Rabbeinu. That was Yisrael's suggestion. But Moshe Rabbeinu said, as soon as I suggested it, everybody seemed to be very excited about it. And they wanted to have all these other dayanim, and Moshe Rabbeinu said that was because you felt that perhaps, you know, you can get a better deal with other dayanim and now with Moshe Rabbeinu. And you should have said, well, isn't it better that we should just learn from Moshe Rabbeinu, who learned directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He criticized Klal Yisrael about the way they accepted this decision. So Moshe Rabbeinu's understanding before Yisrael's criticism was that Klal Yisrael wants this. They're standing in line because they desire to learn from the direct conduit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They don't want to speak through six middlemen. They want to hear it directly from Moshe Rabbeinu. He thought he was giving them the greatest covet by offering his own time to them. But Yisrael offered another point of view, and he said it is diminishing their covet. It's diminishing. It's not respectful that they should have to stand all day and all night to wait and speak to you. So that was the discussion. Then there were two sides. Now, Yisrael doesn't start by challenging Moshe, Lo toiv hadavar ashata oseh, it's not good what you're doing. No, that's not how he starts. The way he starts is he asks Moshe to present his side. Ma hadavar hazeh ashata oseh hamazeh, what is this thing that you're doing? He asks Moshe, present your side. Explain to me what you're doing. And by doing that, it's an extraordinarily important way to start any criticism. You have to first hear the person's point of view. If we go straight and criticize and argue, and even if we know what the other person's point of view is, if we don't give them a chance to voice it, then our criticism just will not be heard, because the other person doesn't feel like they've been heard, so they can't accept the criticism. You don't even know what I'm thinking. You don't know what my approach is. You don't know my way of thinking. So the first thing Yisrael says is, Ma hadavar hazeh ata oseh, what is this thing that you're doing? And after Moshe Rabbeinu explains what he's doing, then Yisrael says, Lo toiv hadavar, he presents another point of view. Another thing that we see from Yisrael is that when Yisrael presents his criticism, which was that Moshe Rabbeinu is diminishing Klal Yisrael's kavod, he doesn't begin with that. That's not what he says. He says first, Novel Tibo, this is going to be too much for you. It's not good for you, Moshe Rabbeinu. You're going to become burnt out. Novel Tibo, it'll take all your energy away, and you won't be able to keep this up. So although his primary motivation for his criticism was the fact that Klal Yisrael was suffering, he didn't limit it to that. And he found many arguments, ones that were beneficial to Moshe Rabbeinu as well. And that's also an important part of criticism, which is that there's always a part of criticism which is harsh, which is the part you don't want to hear. But it can always be accompanied by other arguments and other angles which a person does want to hear, and that softens the blow and makes it much more acceptable and much easier to convince. I was actually just writing about when Yaakov Avinu tells Rachel and Leah that they need to leave Laban's house, and he says, Hashem told me to leave. You think if they say, okay, Hashem told you to leave, well, then we leave. But no, they make a whole argument why they should leave. They say, what were we to Laban? He doesn't care about us. He sold us. What do we have in our father's house? Let's do it like Hashem says. And Mefarshim talk about it, Baal Musar say, is that it's everything has angles to it. Everything has numerous angles to it, and it's our job to have all the angles which help us do what is the right thing to do. And that's what Yisrael did. Yisrael didn't directly attack Moshe Rabbeinu's viewpoint. He told him how it's beneficial for him, how it's beneficial for Klal Yisrael. So we learn from here, in number one, that when giving criticism, the agenda has to be truth, the agenda has to be MS, and a person who's giving the criticism has to demonstrate that they are a person who seeks the truth and do not have any other ulterior motives. The second point is to see what the problem is, and then allow the person to explain their point of view. Allow the other person to explain themselves, why they're doing what they're doing, before you offer the other angle, the criticism, the rebuke, why you disagree. And when we present the criticism, let's try to present it in numerous ways, numerous angles that don't just attack the particular point of view of the person, but also demonstrate how it's the best thing for many reasons, for the people affected, for the own person, and that will make it much easier to accept and to listen to. Lastly, I just want to share something that the Ger Rebbe said He was by a convention where they were trying to come up with ways to solve one of the chinuch problems in Klal Yisrael. And whatever the plan was being offered, there was always someone who was shooting it down. There was this one person who was saying, nah, that's not going to work because of this. They said another way, another option. He said, nah, that's not going to work because of this. He was just constantly focusing and naysaying. You know, there's always people like that, right? So he said, the Emor Emes approached him, the Ger Rebbe, and he said, you know, Yisrael was called Yeser. Why was he called Yeser? Because he added a parsha to the Torah. So Rashi says, which parsha did he add to the Torah? He added the parsha of Va'ata Sechaza, you should see to appoint judges. He says, but that's not really the parsha that Yisrael added. It began much before that. That's when Yisrael already gave his idea. But it began when he told Moshe Rabbeinu, Naval Tibal, Le'tayv Hadavar Asha'ata Oysa, it's not good what you're doing, you're going to become exhausted and drained. That's where Yisrael starts giving his spiel. His criticism is when he tells Moshe Rabbeinu what he shouldn't do. He says, you see, that would not be honored, venerated. If Yisrael, all he would have done, told Moshe Rabbeinu what not to do, he would have got no honorable mention for that, and he would have not had a parsha named after him. His parasha, when he actually starts accomplishing something, is when he offers something constructive to do. He says there's no big chiddush to go and poke holes in everybody's ideas. Only do that if you have something constructive to do in its place. Then that's something, that's the kind of criticism that's meaningful and that's helpful. Have a good night and a wonderful Shabbos.
Shabbos, thank you.